Greetings, couch potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week, we have the triumphant return of somebody to the movies we haven't seen in a long time.
Seth Rogen?
Seth Rogen, that's right. And this little guy known as Superman. Sort of known as Superman. Doesn't get a whole lot of name.
Some days.
Not a whole lot of name checks in that movie.
Not so much, no.
But... yes, we do have Man of Steel, which is, of course, the huge Superman reboot. And then we have This is the End, which stars our buddy Seth Rogen. Which have an interesting story behind that one, which is probably more interesting, at least to us, than the review would be.
Yes.
We're also going to talk about some limited releases. We've got The East, which is a eco-terrorism movie, and Hatchet 3, which is an extremely violent horror movie.
Hmm.
Some new movie news and listener feedback and some DVDs and Blu-rays. It's a packed show.
There's all kinds of stuff this week.
Lots of stuff happening. So
you need to start talking faster.
Let's just start rolling into here. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can call us at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/FGATM. You can reach me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
And I'm Katie K. Reviews.
That's right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We are launching right into the first segment where we're going to talk about news and box office.
Yes, let's do that.
I'm actually going to back off from the victory dances because I don't know any. I thought and thought and thought how I could spin this. I would win.
There is no way to spin this thing this week.
And neither of us win.
I actually came close to the actual box office numbers for the internship, though.
You did.
I did.
You did. You came close. It didn't win.
No.
It was down at number
four.
Holy cow, four. That was sad. That is a terrible number. I hadn't seen it when we recorded last week, but I ended up going to watch the movie. And it's terrible. It is bad.
Well, there's that.
It is bad. And it's let's not even talk about that anymore. Oddly enough, The Purge was number one with $34 million.
Who knew?
Which
is $34 million.
That's an insane number for a movie that cost $3 million to make.
Nice.
So I mean, it's got a middling, like a C cinema score, which usually means it's going to drop like a stone. But you know what? Devil Inside did the same thing.
It's true.
It opened the year in 2012 with something like a $512 million this opening weekend, and everyone hated it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, The Purge, number one with $34 million. Fast and Furious, 6 came in with $20 million, and then you had Now You See Me with $19 million, which is what you said the internship would make.
Yes.
$2 million off. It was $17 million. I said $28 million because I was, I don't know, I drank a lot of cough syrup and bourbon. That That's what I blame it on. And just down the line to everything. Nothing really that spectacular happened to the box office.
Nope. Other than The Purge making $34 million.
Well, what was funny is I started seeing the numbers roll in for Friday.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, it made the money Friday they expected it would make all weekend.
Right, yeah. It was crazy.
I can't explain it. To me, this is sort of like, Snooki having a career. I can't explain.
There are some things in the entertainment business that it's just best not to wonder about.
There is no science behind this that can explain it. And no. Ethan Hawke, what's funny about Ethan Hawke is he did Sinister last year. And I think it cost $6 million to make. And it did extremely well. So
I guess Ethan Hawke has a huge horror following.
I guess
so. Go figure.
Ethan Hawke scares people. Is basically what
he does kind of scare me sometimes.
But you know what's going to happen? I wonder after this sort of 1-2 punch of the internship that didn't scare anybody.
Sounds like it did actually.
Well, yeah, the 1-2 punch of Sinister and The Purge, is this going to cause Ethan Hawke to not
build
do
a huge horror career?
Well, but like to say, well, if I'm going to be in this movie, he wants like a $10 million payday, which is 3 times the budget of The Purge. You know, I mean, I don't know if people are going to be stampeding out to see Before, After, Sunset, Midnight, or whatever that new one is that he has.
Whatever the case may be, yes.
That Richard Linklater movie that the critics love, but nobody else sees.
Right.
Those movies aren't making $34 million in their opening weekend.
No.
But if he does a horror movie, it might. Maybe they'll bring him and The Rock will star together in a horror action
movie.
Awesome. Which would be kind of cool. All right, let's move on to news.
Okay.
This was an interesting story. I saw this, too, and you brought it up, and it kind of was making some rounds on the internet. The headline is, Bad. Well, no, this was your headline. You read it. It's your headline.
Bad news for the Farrelly brothers. Good news for the rest of us.
Yeah, what's going on with this story?
This week, Warner Brothers dumped the latest Dumb and Dumber sequel.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
This is what's interesting. When you read the story, because I was reading the story, I forgot that movie's almost 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. It came out forever ago.
It helped make Jim Carrey's career.
Right.
And I didn't realize it was that old. I mean, I guess I do. You know, it's like Jurassic Park. You don't think of Jurassic Park as being that old. I don't.
No.
But it is. You know, it just had the 20-year anniversary.
Right. And they're still trying to make a sequel.
Yeah. They did the prequel in 2003, which had nothing to do with anybody.
Right.
But, yeah, they're not doing this. I wonder if part of this has to do with the fact that movie 43 was such a disastrous bomb for the Farrelly brothers. Nobody saw.
It's true. And the people who did were quite unhappy about having seen it.
Well, and I also imagine that Dumb and Dumber 2 is with T.O.
Right.
I wonder if it's just part of, I would imagine, why Warner balked at that is... It's Warner, right, that did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The reason Warner balked at that was because how much is that cast going to cost?
Oh, I know.
Because Jim Carrey's lots of money.
He's Jim Carrey now.
Yeah, and you got Jeff Daniels. He's coming off the Newsroom.
And seriously, what's up with Jeff Daniels agreeing to be in this movie? I don't understand that one at all.
I think
Jeff
honestly,
Daniels has better things to do with his life.
I think Jeff Daniels would do it for fun.
Okay.
That's the kind of guy he is.
He is.
You're from Michigan. You know all his Michigan connections.
I do, yes.
He did a live show for a while. It was where he was basically a redneck long underwear and plaid shirt wearing guy.
Well, he did the whole movie on the long underwear and plaid shirt wearing guy.
He loves that sort of thing.
He does those kind of movies. He is kind of goofy and he's fun. Yeah. So there's that, but still, he can do better goofy movies than this one.
Yeah, we don't need a Dumb and Dumber sequel. I think it's
a
good thing. Warner Brothers made the right decision there.
Yes.
The next one we have to talk about is Top Gun 2 is still being knocked around.
Yes. Jerry Bruckheimer is all for it still. And, of course, Tom Cruise is, because of course he is.
And he wants another – he's going to want another volleyball scene because he wants to take off his shirt. And he's going to want another shower scene because he's got to take off his shirt.
Let's not think about that at this point.
I hope they don't bring – I hope they bring back everybody in the cast, even the dead ones, you know, like Goose. Because
nice.
Anthony Edwards, he probably has the best body among all of them because he's – kind of fit Anthony Edwards for his age.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd love to see them bring back, like, Val Kilmer come waddling
nice.
In.
Nice. Val Kilmer.
In his Marlon Brando looking.
Keep your shirt on, Val Kilmer.
But the whole thing is that Bruckheimer and Cruise want to do it.
Well, yeah, and that was a big thing after Tony Scott's death that everybody said, you know, this isn't going to happen anymore.
Yeah.
And that the project was just kind of set aside and they said, you know, because we can't do it with Tony, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, no, just kidding. Well, we're still going to make this movie.
I think with Tony, if Tony Scott were still alive, it would be difficult to make because I don't think a camera can move as much as it would need to make a Top Gun sequel with Tony Scott. Because that guy just couldn't keep a camera still in his last couple movies. So, rest in peace. He's a good guy.
There you go.
Good director. The next one is J.J. Abrams talked about Star Wars and the sequel and didn't say much.
No. But that's J.J. Abrams. That is to be expected. That's why I read the article. I'm like, this doesn't tell me much.
Well,
there you go, J.J. Abrams.
I don't think he's going to be able to sort of like obfuscate plot points the way he's done before.
It is kind of funny because pretty much the article says, well, you know, we're going to do something new, but we're going to be respectful to the past. So he says nothing.
Yeah.
With, you know, but they write a whole article about it.
And
but they are starting to film the beginning of next year, from what it sounds like. And he's moving out to London and setting everything up the end of this year. So,
because he's the first, it's his first time directing a Star Wars movie, so he can't demand it be directed in Los Angeles.
Right.
And then finally, we've got another interesting story. The 50 Shades of Grey, the person writing 50 Shades of Grey, the screenwriter, not the original, is writing the script for Joe Wright's The Little Mermaid, which already Joe Wright's The Little Mermaid, I think, is terrifying enough.
It is a terrifying idea because he's already talked about what he's doing with it, and it scares me.
Joe Wright is a very talented filmmaker who just gets really caught up in his own beauty of direction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the 50 Shades of Grey thing, I mean, it makes me sad.
Have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
There's a good reason for that. I've heard enough about it that I have
I will
steer clear of it.
I will only read Fifty Shades of Grey if I get to listen to it on audiobook and Michael Shannon reads it.
Nice.
That's what I have to say. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk Michael Shannon and Man of Steel.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer-Kramer and Kevin Carr. We've covered our news. We have jumped through and hurried through everything because Now we have a lot of movies to talk about this week.
Yes.
So let's start with Man of Steel.
Yes!
300 director Zack Snyder's Superman reboot finds the legendary hero coming to terms with his abilities as he tries to save his adopted planet from destruction.
My father believed if the world found out who I really was, they'd reject me. He was convinced that the world wasn't ready. What do you think?
What's the S stand for?
It's not an S. On my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S. How about...
Excuse me.
I know you're not a geek by heart. Now, I mean, you kind of are, but you're not.
Okay.
But you like you never watched Star Trek before really watching the movies.
No,
did you ever read Superman comics? Did you ever were you a comic person?
I read Archie comics.
Archie? They're making an Archie movie. They're talking about that.
I read Archie comics all the time. I was a girl, okay?
Well, I'm just curious. Did you never read Superhero?
No, I can't say that I did, no.
But I'm assuming you know all the TV stuff and movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like
it? I actually didn't live under a rock when I was a child, believe it or not.
I did. That's why I read so many comic books. I read Archie comics, too.
There you go. So anyway, Superman. Let's get back to that.
Well, no, I'm curious because that to me, I think that makes a difference whether you have that background.
Right. Yeah. I don't have that background. No, I have a different background than you do.
Sure.
And you are a Superman guy, right?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe you should give your take on it first.
Well, but the reason I say that is because I'm a DC guy.
Uh-huh.
I read Superman, I read Batman,
right.
I read Green Lantern stuff. So whenever DC would do a movie, I was hypercritical of it because
right.
I'm like in this one, for example, in this movie,
mm-hmm.
Kal-El gets his strength from the atmosphere of Earth. And I'm like, no, it's the sun he gets his strength from. It's the yellow sun, not the red Kryptonian. So that's my inner geek coming out and kind
mm-hmm.
of rejecting any changes that they make. So
there are some changes here.
Yeah.
And I have to say that there's one that really bothered me.
Really? Is it something you can say without spoilering? Spoiling? Spoiler?
Well, yeah, because it happens quite soon right into the movie.
Okay.
And it's that Lois knows his identity.
That didn't bother me.
It really bothered me.
Okay.
Because that's one of those things that everything has always been based on that. It's the secrecy. And yeah, you can say that it's irritating. And sometimes it kind of is. But it's just one of those things that his identity has always been a secret. And to have Lois Lane be like, I'm going to look on the internet and I'm going to look some people up. And here he is. And it kind of threw me off for the rest of the movie. I was like, but you're not supposed to know.
Well, you're right. That was always there were hundreds of issues written with stories of her trying to... They had a whole series, Lois Lane, Superman's Girlfriend, comic book in the 50s and 60s that were all about that. Her just trying to find it out. Why it didn't bother me is because back in the 90s, they finally said, okay, this is nonsense. She's a reporter and she's an idiot. She should be able to figure this out. And they had a relationship. And they kind of let that go sometime in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
So I was... It was around the time that they killed him. They did this whole Death of Superman.
Right, yep.
So that didn't bother me because I was like, okay, that's fine in a reboot. But yeah, I can see where if you don't have
it
that
really threw me off, yeah. Whew.
Did you like the movie, though?
I did.
Okay.
I didn't love it. Yeah. There are some things... Zack Snyder, his storytelling is all over the place.
Yeah.
And his storytelling is kind of like his filmmaking. He's quick cuts and shaky and crazy. And his whole storytelling, it's in little snippets and random flashbacks, and we go over here. And there are some times I was like, I'm not entirely sure what the point of what's going on right now is, but, you know, I kind of have a vague idea of what's going on, so I guess that's good enough. But, and yeah, the shaky cam drove me nuts. I actually, I had to close my eyes at parts of the movie just because I was so sick.
It doesn't work in 3D. Shaky, for 3D, you need to have a steadier
hand. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, I mean, this is a gorgeous movie, especially those opening scenes in Krypton.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And that is one thing that Zack Snyder does so well. He can make one beautiful movie.
He is a very visual director.
Mm-hmm. And I think the characters are well done. They have a little bit of an update for modern times,
sure,
which I can appreciate. And Amy Adams is wonderful as Lois Lane.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
And even Superman, you know, he's kind of a dry character in general, but he gets a little more grit and a little more personality this time around. And I kind of appreciated that. So yeah.
I thought they did a good job keeping him as sort of the squeaky clean hero, mm-hmm. which is always tough because Superman is such a goody two shoes.
Yeah.
Even in all the comic books, they always put that. And that's why they always pair him with Batman, because Batman's not.
Right.
And they are such polar opposites with the same sort of end goal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think they did a good job of giving it a little bit of a darker tone to it, mm-hmm. but still keeping him as, you know, Superman, this really nice guy.
Yeah. I thought the cast was great.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones I was a little, you know, I was a little concerned with. Kevin Costner, although he's not 46 years old, that was a whole bunch of nonsense that they showed in that.
Yeah.
They do the math at one point, and you're like, he's supposed to be 46 in this scene? No way. The guy's almost 60. But they do a good job with it. I think the cast is all good. I thought the alternative take on Zod was different, because, again, it's different
right.
from the
yep.
other movies, and it's different from the comic books.
And it's Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
Who is just insane.
My biggest problem with it is it does get a little long at times.
Oh, it's very long.
Very long. And it gets too big. It's like Batman Begins. I say this is the Batman Begins of movies, and it makes sense because, you know, Nolan's hands are on it and that
right,
sort of
yep.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
David Goyer wrote the script.
Yep.
Who didn't? It just gets too big and emotionally not big. Whereas if you look at Batman Begins, that gets extremely big at the end.
Mm-hmm.
They're driving this train. They're going to blow up the entirety of Gotham. And it's a big movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas The Dark Knight is a bigger movie but a much more intimate story.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that that's where this one, I don't know, where do you go from this point? Because it gets huge.
It does get huge.
It's like Avengers times 10 huge.
Yes. There were a few things in the end that I was like, but now what?
What destructive force is going to show up in the Justice League movie that's going to be like Superman's like, hey, I took care of Zod, you know, or something.
Yeah, really.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's going to be a sequel. Sorry. Anyways, real quick, what's your final grade?
Kind of rocks.
I said kind of rocks, too. I didn't love it.
No.
But and the stuff I thought I'd have a problem with, I didn't.
Hmm.
It was the other things that just sort of like, I was like, well, it's not perfect. But then again, I felt very similar about Batman Begins.
It's a fun superhero movie.
Hmm.
There you go.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr, Kristen Dreyer Kramer. The next movie, we're just going to kind of tease into this, and then we'll probably talk a little bit more about it
on yep.
the other side of the break, is This Is the End.
Yes. In this end-of-the-world comedy, Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, and others find themselves trapped in James Franco's house, trying to survive the apocalypse and each other.
James Franco's having a giant party.
Yes!
This place is beautiful.
The sheriff's office is urging people to stay in their homes right now.
Looting, rioting.
For all we know, the Lakers could have just won, and that's the reason why all this is happening.
I think it's the apocalypse. It's all in here.
And he opened the bottomless pit.
The sinkhole? Every single time I turn on the news, sinkhole in South America, a bunch of South Americans getting sucked into the ground.
Sinkhole de Mayo.
Real quick, before we even give our opinions, we'll do that on the other side of the break. The history behind this with us
is... Yes, tell the story.
There was... It's 30 seconds. I only have a little bit of time to do it, but apparently they were going to use a... We had given... Our critic organization had given James Franco an award for 127 hours, and they asked permission to use that award in the movie, and they didn't! And I don't know where
we were all excited to go to the screening and see it, and it didn't happen.
And it wasn't there. So we have to wait till the DVD comes out and see if it's in deleted scenes. But it would have been really cool if they were just making fun of... We were expecting them to make fun of us.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Central Ohio, they'd be like, what? Who cares?
Right.
All right. When we get back, we're going to talk more about This Is the End.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Yes.
We just got our story on This Is the End and how we were... How would I say this? That is
disappointed
for radio.
Disappointed that we weren't in the movie?
We were let down by the fact that we were not mocked in this movie.
Curse you, Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
You should make fun of us.
I know. We were all excited to be mocked in this movie. We'll take it. So, this is one insane movie.
Yeah.
Yes. This is actors playing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think that's the kind of, that is the most intriguing thing about this movie.
Uh-huh.
That the main characters in this movie are the actors themselves.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not Seth Rogen playing some guy. It's Seth Rogen playing Seth Rogen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's James Franco playing some twisted version of James Franco. And it kind of makes it feel like Us Weekly made a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
It, well, you know what? We'll say they handled the whole, I know, look at all these celebrities I know. They handled it way better than Judd Apatow does.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Because it totally makes sense with them all partying at James Franco's house.
There are all kinds of celebrities at a party at James Franco's house, and it is funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some moments, just even the mundane conversations they have are hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts out, honestly, the first hour of the movie, I was like, this is the funniest thing I've seen in a very long time. So there's that. There are a few moments. I mean, Danny McBride is in it.
A lot more than he should be.
Way more than he should be. Danny McBride is one of those actors that you can have in small snippets, and he's okay. He's tolerable in small snippets.
There's a reason why Your Highness was not the biggest box office hit of 2011. Is that when that came
really?
Out?
Really? It's because of Danny McBride?
I think a lot of it had to do with Danny McBride, yes. What I find funny is you watch these movies a lot, and you just kind of see them all separated, and you're like, God, there's a lot of these just like pot smoking characters.
Yes.
And then you realize when you see this movie that they're just all the same. They're all their buddies. And so there's
they're
like six
friends.
Or eight of them.
Yeah.
And you put them all in one movie and it's, and you're like, oh, it's just those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in a bunch of movies separately.
Right.
I took this as a higher budget, more focused Cheech and Chong movie.
Yeah, it's kind of that.
Where it doesn't have a plot necessarily. I mean, it does.
In fact, I like the parts the best that didn't have a plot.
Yeah.
Those are the parts that are the most successful.
They set up the apocalypse, they have an ending, and then it's just a bunch of shenanigans in the middle.
Yes. And the shenanigans are quite mm-hmm. funny.
Yeah.
For the most part. There are a few moments that you're like, okay, enough already.
But it's amazing how well it actually holds together for as scatterbrained as it is.
And now, this movie was based on a short film that was made before. And often, after a while, they just hit a brick wall with these movies that, you know, it's you're trying to stretch out this whole plot into something that's an hour and a half long or however long.
No, it's like close to 2 hours.
It is close to 2 hours. And at one point, you hit a brick wall. And this movie does.
Yeah.
At one point, clearly they don't know what else to do with it, so they just go completely insane.
And that's actually kind of entertaining.
Okay. To me, that was just the part where the whole movie fell apart.
Are you talking about like where they're trying to figure out what to do next? Or just them just wandering around in the house? Because they wander around. There's a good 40 minutes where they're just sort of like knocking around the house.
Yeah, no, there's a part in the end involving Jonah Hill that is kind of the turning point in this movie.
Well, no, but that's where they try and pull the plot in.
Right, which is the problem.
Yeah.
Like I said, they pull the plot in and suddenly it just doesn't work anymore. Because then they take it in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of falls apart. You're like, yeah, okay, so now we're going completely insane.
This is one of those rare movies where plot and character do get in the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of making the movie. So.
Yeah.
What's your final grade on it?
I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
I say it kind of rocks. I don't think it's amazing.
No.
And I'm still bitter that they didn't make fun of us.
I am a little bit bitter about that, too.
But yeah, so I'm giving it a kind of rocks. We're going to move on to two really quick movies. I'm just going to give you real quick reviews of these because I had a chance to check them out this week. One is The East, in which a former FBI agent goes undercover with a radical eco-terrorism group to feed intel to a corporate security investigator.
Another corporate figure has been targeted by the eco-activist group The East.
We need someone to get inside The East.
Who would you choose?
Me. I'm unexpected. Being unexpected is the only advantage that matters.
Robert McCabe called me himself. In 1 month's time, I want to know the identities of every person who poisoned his company.
There's something planned for us.
When it comes to breaking the law, most people can't handle it.
This one stars Britt Marling, and it's, mm-hmm. I don't know how to say his name. I call him Zal Batman, because it starts out as Batman is his last name.
Zal Batman.
It's the same guy who directed The Sound of My Voice.
Right.
Which Britt Marling also co-wrote and was in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as The Sound of My Voice.
Really?
It kind of covers the same territory. Did you not like the sound of my voice?
It was okay.
Okay.
I liked it more than many of her movies.
Yeah. I'm not a big Brett Marley fan.
No, I'm not either.
But Sound of My Voice was more cohesive. This one seemed like it was trying to tackle bigger issues, but it ends up being about extremes. It's about the quote-unquote, you know, the stereotypical rich corporation, evil people who don't care about anybody, and then the crazy whack job hippie liberals out in the woods, you know, swimming in their own filth. There is no middle ground. And what's interesting about it is also, if you read about it, the idea came from her and the director, trying freeganism. It's basically dumpster diving. It's eating food that has been thrown out that's not really rotten.
Okay.
So you don't actually have to, you're not giving into payment. So it suddenly it gets like this pervasive message about that. And you're like, that's not what this movie's about. So it does lose focus at times, but it's a decent thriller when it wants to be.
I have to say that now I have to thank my daughter for being sick on the day of that screening. Because I'm okay that I missed it now.
It wasn't great, but it's a conversation starter. Let's just say that.
Okay.
So,
what's your grade?
It kind of rocks.
Okay.
The next one is Hatchet 3.
You've all been waiting for.
I know. Even though the urban legend Victor Crowley has been left in pieces in the swamp, murders continue in the bayou.
Well.
I killed him.
You guys think a girl did this?
Let me see if I got this straight. A ghost wiped out everyone in front of you. How many bodies you say there were?
20, 30. Crowley killed them all.
Best you got for me? Some kind of urban legend?
I'm telling you the truth.
Whether you want to believe it or not, this has Victor Crowley written all over it.
This is an extremely violent movie. Extremely violent, and the Hatchet series is known for getting NC-17 ratings. Mm-hmm. In fact, the second one was in the theaters and got pulled for the NC-17 rating.
Mm-hmm.
This one, everyone's made of rubber, so you can like rip faces off and arms off, and everything sprays like a cartoon effect. It's a horror movie sequel, but here's the thing. It plays exactly like a Friday the 13th 80s sequel.
Nice.
So if you love that, and I love those kind of movies because they're terrible, but they're fun, and it doesn't take itself too seriously, and it's ridiculous, and arms are like there's a scene where he just literally just rips a guy's head off, like just straight up.
Straight up, even.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even a twist or a chop. It was just bleep, and I'm like, what are the people made of paper mache? And, I mean, it starts off with Danielle Harris, who's this adorable, tiny little lady. I mean, she's 36. I mean, she played the little girl in Halloween 4.
Okay.
And so she's a scream queen now. And she's this tiny little pretty girl. And it starts with her literally smashing Victor Crowley's head in and then chopping him in half with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any less gory from that point on. But it's funny.
It sounds awesomely bad.
I enjoyed it. I'm surprised at how much I enjoyed Hatchet, because I didn't like the first Hatchet. I thought it took itself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see the second one. This one...
This doesn't seem to be taking itself very seriously.
Doesn't take anything seriously. It's such a ludicrous film. But it's fun. I encourage you to see it. It's open very limited, but it's also on video on demand this week. So you can get on like iTunes and probably Amazon. So check it out. It's fun. Get your friends. Have some beers.
And your grade?
Kind of rocks.
All right.
And now it's time for box office predictions. What do you think's going to win this weekend? Hatchet 3?
I'm going to go with Hatchet 3. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. Well, how about you?
I'm going to put my money on Man of Steel.
Huh, that's weird.
I am going to say, I'm going to throw, do you want me to throw out the first number?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm
going to
say 87 million.
87? Wow.
What's yours?
That's a little lower than people are predicting.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to go with 99. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't have faith that he's going to break 100.
No.
See, I'm going to say 87 just because they're opening it later. They're not doing early shows. They're doing 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in the middle of the summer. There's a lot of competition out there.
See, I was looking at some of the numbers, and I figure if Fast and Furious 6 can get 97 on opening weekend, then Man of Steel can get 99.
Well, we'll see what happens. We'll come back. We're going to talk DVDs.
Thank you.
Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Chris Andrea Kramer.
Hello.
We are going to lead right into a voicemail from our good friend Thomas from Seattle.
Hello, Thomas.
So let's just jump into this since we don't have much time in the show left.
Hi, Kevin and Kristen. This is Thomas from Seattle. I had a question for y'all about Vince Vaughn and Will Smith. It seems like they both have problems with their career. Vince Vaughn is still doing the same ass-talking shtick. And Will Smith is seen as this, like, Machiavellian figure who's pushing his kids through movies and music. His kids are elevated because they're Will Smith's kids. They're not earning it through talent. Are these guys just living in a bubble? Because it seems like they're not ever getting the memo. I mean, Vince Vaughn, his new movie, The Internship, it looks like it could have been made 10 years ago. And Will Smith just seems like he's happy to make his kids, you know, number one actors in the country. And so are these guys just totally in a bubble? Or do you think they're understanding their action from the public? Like, they're selling the bill of goods that we're not really accepting right now. Anyway, Thomas from Seattle. Have a good show this week, guys, and I'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
All right, here you go. Vince Vaughn, Will Smith. Are their careers over? Are they pushing their children? What's happening here?
This is a tough one. I mean, there is so much that you can say about these two actors, both of them, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you take Vince Vaughn, he has been the same character forever.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, sometimes you have to grow up and change a little bit to make yourself a little bit marketable, because he is not a kid anymore, and it's time to start playing some other roles. And yeah, when's the last time Vince Vaughn made a good movie?
I like The Watch.
The Wedding Crashers?
I'm one of the
crashers?
Few people who liked
it. I didn't see that one.
It's
so,
not great, but I found parts of it funny.
And I think his audience has just outgrown him.
Well, I think part of it with him is, because he did this in The Watch, and you didn't get a chance to see it, but he has a daughter in The Watch. And so it just, you think of him as the guy from Swingers.
Right.
And you're going to eternally think of his fast-talking, smart-talking guy from Swingers. But then when you start giving him a daughter.
Yeah.
Or you start putting him in movies like The Dilemma, where he's dealing with marital infidelity.
Right.
Which is not necessarily the same as.
No, it's kind of a mess.
You know, what his goals are. It goes completely against the goals of Swingers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. It's like, I don't think that Jon Favreau can come back and do Swingers 2 and have any sort of credibility. So you're right. I think, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, Thomas, I think he needs a change. He's also not doing very daring roles. He did a bunch of sort of out-of-the-box roles in the 90s.
Right, yep.
And, you know, stuff like Clay Pigeons and stuff like that, but he's not doing those anymore.
I think he's just getting stuck in his rut now.
Yeah. And they're throwing him in movies. And then when it comes to Will Smith, yeah, I mean, I think he kind of bowed out for a while. And I think
he did. He took 4 years off between 7 Pounds and Men in Black 3. So he just kind of faded into the woodwork. And, you know, that's fine. He's got a couple of kids. They're doing their thing. And maybe he's just enjoying life for once, because he's been in the public eye for a long time.
Well, but also anybody who's in, when you're on top, you're not going to be on top forever.
Right.
And I remember the 90s, Burt Reynolds was a joke. But he was the highest paid box office star in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He just was.
Yep.
Same thing. And you saw the same thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
Massive box office king. And then even in the 90s when he was doing movies like The Sixth Day and Collateral Damage, he just wasn't the same as he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had that 5 to 10 years of reigning championship, and then you don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're somebody like Tom Hanks, who's okay with doing smaller movies and
more
artistic roles, if you're still just all you're trying to do is make box office gold, eventually you'll burn out.
Right. Yep.
That's about it. I hope that answers your question, Thomas.
Thanks, Thomas.
We've got to roll into the next segment, which we of course like to refer to as
the DVD Roundup.
Yeah.
Woo!
First one on the list. You probably heard some of the music for this in this show already.
Mm-hmm.
It's Oz the Great and Powerful. We have a couple tracks on there, and you get the soundtrack, which is done by Danny Elfman.
Yes.
And I pointed this out to you. I didn't know if you noticed this. But,
I didn't notice. Now I will check.
The Oz the Great and Powerful theme is very similar to O Canada.
There you have it.
Has a lick from that. Now, oddly enough, Danny Elfman's not Canadian.
I was just going to ask, and I didn't think he was.
He was born in Los Angeles.
There you go.
San Francisco. But I don't know what's going on. I think we're going to be invaded soon.
We're
going to have Canadian bacon and Tim Hortons. We already have a Tim Hortons.
We have Tim Hortons everywhere here.
It's insane. Mm-hmm. They're already in here. This is like some conspiracy.
They're slowly taking over. One donut at a time.
That's right. Anyways, Oz the Great and Powerful, funny movie. Fun movie. You enjoyed it, didn't you?
I did. Didn't love it. James Franco didn't work for me.
It was odd seeing it right after This Is the End.
Yes. Yeah, I think I actually watched them again the same day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you watch it, you're just like, wow, he's not taking this role seriously at all. No. Whatsoever.
No.
And he's as high as a kite.
Yeah. But other than that, it's great in 3D. I mean, mm-hmm. this movie was made for 3D.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Well, Sam Raimi, things thrown at you.
Oh, yeah.
Things come at you. It's, mm-hmm. it's a good movie. So, yeah, it's definitely a good pick. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters is out.
Speaking of great picks, no.
No? Did you get this to look at on Blu-ray?
I didn't. No.
I didn't even ask.
No, I don't know that I did.
We actually saw this in the theater, and I left right before a nude scene, but I... was sitting there lurking in the aisle because I noticed
because that wasn't creepy at all
as I was walking. Oh yeah. And then I was like making noises. It was kind of embarrassing.
It was embarrassing to be me. Yeah.
But then I came back late and you looked at me like I was like, cause I went to go get popcorn and I was
well, cause you were gone forever.
And I'm just like, well, I was waiting for the nude, make sure the nude scene was over. Cause she's kind of cute. That's my full summation of
that's
Hansel
pretty much the movie. Yep. That one scene.
Yeah. Anyways, there's also How to Survive a Plague, which I haven't seen, but I hear it's a decent movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's about AIDS, isn't it?
I believe it is, yeah. Okay.
And then there's a bunch of Disney Blu-rays.
Disney's doing another Blu-ray dump this week.
That's right.
Yes.
What do we got here?
We have Lilo and Stitch, Atlantis, and The Emperor's New Groove, which all three of those come with their straight-to-video sequels as well.
Which sequel for... Because there's like 10 video sequels to Lilo and Stitch.
It's Lilo and Stitch 2.
Okay.
Stitch has a glitch.
Stitch has a glitch.
Yes.
That one's not bad. I liked Leroy and Stitch the best in terms of...
I didn't see that one.
That one was kind of fun.
Yeah, I actually went through some of these this week with my sick child. So that's...
What'd you think?
She was not interested so much.
Okay.
She coughed a little bit and tried to get away.
She's a little young, though.
Yeah. She'll get there someday.
She's not exactly, you know, penning a blog on the internet about...
No, it's one of those things, you know, I was sitting there watching all this Disney stuff, and we were watching, like, Phineas and Ferb all week. I'm like, I know that I could watch whatever, because she's 11 months old, but it just feels right when your kid's sick to watch the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that works.
Yeah.
I remember I took my youngest son to the pediatrician when he was, for one of his, like, early... checkups.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, what are you doing? I go, oh, I was watching Diary of the Dead. I said, and my pediatrician's like, what? I'm like... He's like 6 weeks old. He has no concept of this. And my pediatrician, to this day, we don't normally take our kids in. They don't get sick all that often, so we're not in there seeing the pediatrician mm-hmm. all the time. And my youngest son is 5 now. Even now, he'll ask if I watch horror movies with the kids anymore. And I'm like, well, now I'm not exactly going to watch. I'm not watching a Serbian film and we're not having popcorn and candy during that.
Although, you might.
It would make the movie a little bit more fun. There's also, so yeah, you mentioned those. There's also a bunch of
TV
stuff. Mm-hmm. One of them is not really TV, is House of Cards Season 1.
Netflix, yep.
Actually coming on disc.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting, that was one of the successes.
Yep.
Because Netflix did House of Cards and Hemlock Grove, which is awful. And then the Arrested Development sequel, fourth
right.
season. So yeah, House of Cards and Arrested Development, those are the ones. I'm kind of cool. I think it's kind of cool they release it on... Releasing it on disc.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
A whole bunch of cable. There's Burn Notice Season 6, and it's getting a little... It's jumping the shark a bit.
Hmm.
Of course, this last season that just started airing
mm-hmm.
is the final season.
Right.
Which is probably good, because there's only so far you can
time
take
to move
Michael
on,
Weston.
Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's The New Newsroom Season 1, starring mm-hmm. Dumb and Dumber 2's Jeff Daniels. Which I don't watch. Do you watch it?
I don't know.
It's an HBO or Showtime show.
Yeah,
it?
I don't have those.
And then there's
I have enough movies to watch on my own.
There's a bunch of stuff dumped from USA Networks. You've got Major Crimes, which is the follow-up to The Closer, Season mm-hmm. 1. Rizzoli and Isles, Season 3. Necessary Roughness, Season 2. And Fairly Legal, Season 2. The stinker of the week, we agree.
Oh, yes. Snitch.
Is Snitch. Snitch has a glitch.
Dwayne Johnson.
This was the one Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne the Tub, I'm drowning. This is the one Dwayne Johnson movie this year that it was not a massive success for him.
Yeah, this one was kind of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it was not very action-packed.
No, it was really boring.
It was really dull and dramatic, and it just did not work at all.
And Barry Pepper, I could smell the soup in his beard from the seat in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, about 30 seconds here. We're just going to wrap it up. Man of Steel, we both said kind of rocks.
Yep.
This is the end. We both said kind of rocks. The East and Hatchet 3, I said kind of rocks for both of them. It's a kind of rocks day.
All right.
For fat guys in the movies. We'll see who wins next weekend. You said Man of Steel with $99 million. I said $87
million. Yep.
I'm sure somebody will be doing a victory dance tomorrow or next week.
Or maybe not.
Spoiler alert. Anyways, next week we're going to talk Monsters University and World War Z. Mm-hmm. Until then, talk to you guys later.
See ya.